The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, Disco Inferno is here. He joins Talk is Jericho. You hear him every week on Keeping It 100 with Conan right here on the Jericho Network. But he's finally making his solo debut right here on Talk is Jericho. And he's got all kinds of stories. You know Disco. He loves to talk. He's got an infectious laugh, an infectious personality. He's got a lot of opinions. And he's got a lot of stories about his days in WCW. He got there 1 week before Nitro debuted on the air back in 1996, what Raven had to do at Disco's gimmick, working with China at WWE, and some of his crazier indie matches, like the time he had to work in a pretend cage that electrocuted if you touched one of the pretend walls. Yeah, he's also talking about booking, some of the ideas he came up with that weren't used, invisible men, alien invasions. He did come up with a man of 1,004 holds, though, as well, that the famous man of 1,004 hold promo that I did, where he's going to tell us all about that. He's also talking about all things wrestling, all things WCW. It's a great conversation with the Disco Inferno. But first, got another WCW legend. Did you take advantage of DDP's big sale on everything DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, the big sale he had on Black Friday week? You didn't? Okay, stick your hand out. I'm going to slap you. I'm going to smack you right now. That's for not going to ddp.com/Jericho last week, but that's okay. You still got time. You know why? Do you want to know why? Because DDP loves the holidays so much, and he loves all of you. He's extended his biggest sale ever and is still offering DDPY and all DDPY related swag for 25% off, one quarter off. He's slashing it down. 25% off. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You know what DDBY has done for me and what it's done for Jake the Snake and Scott Hall, Kane, AJ Styles, RVD, Goldust. They're all doing the DDPY program as well. Now it's the perfect time for you to get on the path to healthier living with DDPY, because Dallas has made it even easier than ever for you to get started thanks to the 5, 10, 15, 20, 25% off sale and his new DDP Yoga Now app. All right. With that app, you can do DDPY anytime, anywhere, any place, right from your phone or your tableta. The app not only lets you do all the workouts right from your phone, it's also got a bunch of other cool features to keep you on that path to healthy living. You can use the DDPY Now app to track your heart rate and calories. You can use it for pain tracking measurements and even progress photos. And DDP Yoga Now app subscribers won't ever get bored doing the same workouts over and over again, because DDP's added completely new 2.0 workouts and weekly live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay, for a limited time, you can get the DDP Yoga DVDs for 25% off, plus 3 months of full access for free to the DDP Yoga Now app. All you got to do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's all you got to do to take advantage of this fabuloso deal. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 5, 10, 15, 20, 25% off the DDPY program and all DDPY swag. Okay, and of course, when you buy the DVDs, you'll also get 3 months of free access to the DDP Yoga Yoga Now app. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Are you sitting on the fence? Are you thinking, oh, this is all just one big scam, or I'm not buying into this? I'm telling you, man, you got to get your head out of your relative behind and go try DDP Yoga Now. It's the best workout mentally and physically you'll ever do. It's going to cure what ails you. Change your life. Change it today. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Do it now.
Talk is hockey. Talk is Jericho.
All right, so I'm here in Las Vegas with the Disco Inferno, and my first question is, do you have any hot news?
No, do you have any hot news?
I was thinking the other day, what started that?
Just me and Madden, just Mark Madden.
Yeah.
You know, so when we just would always, every single time we'd see each other, and to this day, when I call Madden, the phone conversation is, you know, that's a greeting. Do you have any hot news? No, do you have any hot news? And we never have any hot news. You know, there's like hot news. He'll have a story. Like he was a perfect example of his most recent hot news. Like we never have hot news. You know, we talk like multiple times a week, and it's like, hey, he goes, oh, I do have hot news. And I go, oh, right. He goes, I'm going to go see Iron Maiden in New York. I'm like, that's not hot news. It's like, you know, it's like, that's how weak the hot news.
But that kind of became the thing. Like, you know, the hot news was just whatever you had.
Oh, absolutely. Because back then, you know, rumors were, you know, we the internet was growing, you know, and stuff. Like the rumor mill backstage was big, and so we'd always like, hey, do you have any hot news?
It's like starting in talking about WCW time frame. Yeah,
WCW.
Yeah, how funny is that when you say, like, the internet hadn't even started yet? Like, how much has the business changed now with the internet? Like, you know everything.
Oh, bro.
Whereas then you knew really nothing.
You know, back when I broke in, what year did you break in?
Like 1990.
Okay, I broke in 92.
Okay.
And, you know, until I started training to be a wrestler, you know, I'd never like guys at the school or the, you know, some of the wrestlers or the guys that were running the show, you know, they'd have the Observer and the Torch.
Yeah.
I'd never seen those.
Right.
You know, we're like the last of the guys, you know, the guys that are mid-40s and stuff, everything. Mm-hmm. We're the last of the guys that broke in when we really didn't know, like we knew from watching TV.
Right.
You know, we only knew like, okay, I see them talking in there, they're talking, mm-hmm. but we didn't know how it was done.
Yeah.
You know, of course, today's education, everybody knows how to wrestle before they even, you know, just by watching on TV, reading about it backstage, they know everything. But before, you didn't know much, you know. And when I started training, I was like, okay, I get this, you know. So we're marks, mm-hmm. kind of, you know. Like these days, there's, you know, they're not marks now.
Yeah.
They're smart, and they're getting in the business first, you
That's
know.
That's a great point.
Right.
You might be starting to train, but you kind of know the concept of what wrestling is all about before you even get in the ring and hit the ropes or anything like that.
Absolutely. I mean, like, you, but then that's why, like, so many people are wrestlers today.
Mm.
You know, it's like, it's funny, like, because Jim Mitchell had a quote, the Sinister Minister. He had a great quote there. It's like today, like, since everybody's a wrestler, it's like nobody's really a wrestler because everybody wrestles.
Huh.
There's like so many people that do this these days. But like I said, you know, so the internet kind of grew like mid-90s.
Mid-90s,
yeah, because we were still beepers.
Yeah.
You know, like this, yeah, yeah, so there was the beeper. We didn't, you know, then slowly the cell phones started integrating, and then, you know, the education level started increasing on, you know, finding hot news. You know, you could get, like, you could go to the show, like, before, you know, guys wouldn't be able to talk to each other unless you were home or on the payphone.
Right,
you know,
right.
Beeping each other. Now, there's constant communication, text messaging and stuff. I think you're always in contact with everybody and everything. So that's how hot news, you know, so now there's tons of hot news, actually, but me and Matt never have any, you know. So.
No one's giving you any of the hot news at all.
Right.
And we're in Vegas now, and this is where you live now, and this is where you work. Are you still involved with the business?
Yeah, I'm still involved. People say they retire, right?
Yeah.
Bro, to me, retiring from wrestling is you never receive another payday for ever doing anything in wrestling ever again. As long as you can do this and get paid to do it, you'll never really retire. So I still work every now and then. I stay in good shape, you know.
Yeah, great shape,
Decent shape.
You look almost the same as you did in 95 when you started.
Right,
hair's never changed.
Right. Cocoa butter. That's my thing these days. But yeah, and I teach, they have a wrestling school here, and they have like me, Kenny King, Sin Bodhi, mm-hmm. Old Kazarni, Alcatraz, and TJ Perkins, Alcatraz, right? We train at this at the school they have here, and I teach a class on Wednesdays from like 4 to 6. Just a local guys, probably get probably like 10 to 15 kids that come in, you know, and teach for a couple hours and stuff. Just,
and it seems like Vegas still has a little bit of a scene here. Like, I know there's some independents, and
it's a hot spot. I mean,
really,
like, you know, well, not for making money, Like the shows aren't as big. Like, you know, the East Coast Indies had that thing, you know, where like every weekend there's shows up there. There's, yeah. you know, stuff. And then they're bigger because there's more of a, I don't know, it's just easier to get around up north, you know, like there's.
Sure. You know, there's so many places that are so close right. together.
But we're a pretty good epicenter for the L.A. Arizona crews. And there's a lot of wrestlers in Arizona and there's a lot of wrestlers in L.A. and there's a lot of wrestlers in Northern California. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the five groups here. Run at some
really?
Point. Yeah, well, they had that you know, PPW, the Paragon Pro Wrestling, was taping here. We run. There's another local group that runs. Ring of Honor runs
here. Yeah. They Jarrett run here. Had his thing
Jarrett
here.
Jarrett has his thing here. It's Vegas, bro. It's like, of course there's going to be, you right. know. And the shows that do well are the ones that advertise well here. Because it's a hard, you know, this is a tough ticket in this town if you don't advertise because sure. there's just so much stuff going on,
yeah.
you know.
Was Sin had, was it Freak Show Wrestling?
Freak Show Wrestling, yeah. I did one of those.
Did you? Yes. As what? What was your name?
It was Disco Inferno, Disco, okay. but I had against this kid who was a mime, okay? And we had an invisible electrocuted cage match. Okay, so we had to pretend that there was a steel cage surrounding the ring, and it was an electric shock
uh-huh.
every time you touched it.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it is what it is. It was yeah. actually, but the fans accept the matches for what they are.
They know what's up.
They know
what's all the matches are weird. The ghost of yeah. Michael Jackson versus
right.
the ghost of Whitney Houston.
Right, exactly. And they cheer. They do the right cheers and stuff. They participate properly.
Yeah.
You know, so
isn't it funny though? After 20 odd years at the Disco Inferno, the character, the gimmick, still exists. Like that's longevity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was like, so, bro, you know me. I mean, I like, you know. I don't do the. I don't risk a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've never.
I've
had one concussion. Okay, in my entire. I've been wrestling 20 something years.
Right.
I've had one concussion. Just had it like a year and a half ago, and it was like it wasn't even really. Like you've probably had. I mean, how many think you've had?
Well, I can't even say because they say every time that you see a flash.
Right.
See stars.
Right.
That it's a concussion.
Exactly.
So under those terms. 100?
Yeah, Jesus.
But ones where I was actually knocked out and didn't know where I was,
right.
Zero. Thank
okay.
God.
I've never been knocked out. Bro, you know they say when you see flash and stuff?
Yeah.
I've had one.
Wow.
And this was recently, a year and a half ago, and I was wrestling Kenny King, and he gives me this spin kick, and he hits me right square in the head. You know like how you have that like instant black flash? You
yeah.
know, like, and it's like, you're like, wow, that hurt. You know, but mm-hmm. it's not like... I didn't get like not knocked out or nothing, but just like a like if somebody like just stood yeah. in front of you, just punched you right in the forehead, not super hard, but hard, you know.
Yeah.
So I went through the match, everything's fine, no symptoms or nothing. I got a little bump on my head. Okay, afterwards mm-hmm. I just put ice on it. I'm not, you know, no symptoms. Mm-hmm. Okay, I go home that night, drive home, and I feel nothing. I can't remember the security code to get back in my house.
Wow.
And it's just like I'm like, God, what?
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah,
and it's weird. So I'm like, I got a concussion, and it wasn't like a major one, but like some, I didn't do anything for 3 days. Started light exercise and just, you know, I was fine, but never had any symptoms after that or nothing. But just, it's really weird to think, like, I hear about all these guys that had, like you had, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, did you ever have any, like, you know, like you said, we just had a flat, you just got rocked in the match, and then, like, you're driving home, you take the wrong turn
mm-hmm.
or something. Did that happen
to you? Happens more often, too, where I'll do stuff like that where it doesn't make sense. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go for a bike ride and then realize 5 minutes away from home, I forgot to put my bike in the back of the truck. Like, stuff like that, you
right,
know?
Right, right, right.
Just things where you're like, oh, old forgetful me. But it happens more often where I'm sure there's a connection.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's a connection. But it's just by the fact of being in the business, like you said,
mm-hmm.
20-odd years, 22.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you take risks or not. You're still taking bumps.
Yeah, bump, right.
And taking a bump is a risk.
And it's an impact.
Right.
It's a stressful impact on the body,
uh-huh.
you know, and stuff. So, I don't know, man. It's just weird what, you know, like the symptoms, like some guys, you know, like it's I get scary sometimes because I hear about the guys that they get depressed and stuff and
yeah,
everything
yeah,
all that,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I've never had like issues like that or anything, you know, stuff. So I'm just happy that I've still got my health, my back, you know, the only problem I ever had was my back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I haven't broken anything in the ring.
Did you ever get injured? I don't remember.
It's just my back. Remember this, because we were on that Germany tour. I don't know if you were here. Maybe you'd already gone.
Uh-huh.
We did a tour of Germany, and on the last day of the tour, me and Alex Wright were supposed to win the tag team titles, okay? And we used to tape the two shows, yeah. You know, especially when you're overseas. On the first show, I blew my back out in a battle, in like a Royal Rumble match, okay? And I couldn't walk. Uh-huh. The backstage and muscle spasms, everything. So what they did was, they instead of just scratching the match in the angle, they just stuck Hugh Morris with Alex Wright and gave them the belt, so they won the belt. So I could, and I was like, and this is one of the worst days of my life. So I was totally like, you know, My back was screwed. You blow your back out. I've never had a...
Can't bend over. You can't walk.
You're in bed. You can't even really turn to your side when you're in bed. You know, it's just that bad. And I remember we were in Germany. We were flying to Gatwick. Okay, we have to take the... And there's a propeller plane from Germany. I'm like, God, you know, back then I had a couple... took some muscle relaxers, you know. I wasn't big on the pain pills. I took the ibuprofen and stuff and everything. So, so we get on the plane and we land, and I get off the plane. I'm like, I'm struggling. I go, hey, I need a wheelchair, you know, because we got to catch the next flight. Bro, it took me so long to get to the gate to Delta for the flight back home to the States. They literally shut the door on me when I got to the gate, and I'm explaining to the guy, my back's killing me. Okay, I can't move. So I got locked out. I got stuck in Gatwick Airport. This guy, airport worker, this old man, he wheels me around, wheels me in the infirmary. It must have been a mile away.
Infirmary in the airport?
Whatever there's a medical area. Okay, yeah. So, but they can't give me any medication because it's just like, you know, it's not a hospital, right? So I'm like, oh, God. So you know, I'm calling back home. We're organizing a flight. I'm flying out the next morning. So the guy wheels me to the hotel airport. Literally, bro, I'm so messed up. He has to wheel me to my bedside, okay? Wow. And I get out. And I take my shirt off, okay, and I'm standing, I'm bracing myself, I look in the mirror, and I'm lopsided. Like you know, like when your body, like when you're in muscles, it's a scary sight. Because you're looking at your body, and it's all different, you're curvy, and like really bad scoliosis.
I was gonna say that, right.
But the scoliosis is like your body, you know, you're all distorted. I'm like, oh my God, I was going, oh my God, this is... I'm thinking I'm crippled for life or something. Like, there's something wrong with me, right? So the next morning, they sent me up with a doctor, okay? And so they literally have to wheel me down, wheel me to the cab, okay? I go to the doctor, and he gives me, it was called Tylex, which is a mixture of codeine and some massive painkiller and Valium to get home . He goes, this will get you home. I'm like, okay, cool. So knocks me out. I take the flight home. I get home, I'm taking these codeine pills. Bro, it constipated me for 57 hours, okay? On top of me being like, you know, like, it was the worst, like, 3-4 days span of my entire life. I was in agony. It was horrible. And I was like, but that's the only time I've ever been, like, really seriously hurt. And then the funny thing, it introduced me because after I got hurt, I went to the doctor, but I went to a chiropractor, kinesiologist, okay? And the guy is a guy that, like, Paige eventually started going to, and I went to his partner.
Paige's witch doctor.
But the guy's brilliant. I mean, to this day, I don't see anybody unless I go back to Atlanta and I see this guy, because he's that good with my body. And just, like, it was like almost like a blessing. I was supposed to be out for 3 months. He had me back in the ring in 5 weeks.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wasn't there also a time, too, when there was a trap door in the ring?
Yes.
When you hurt your back on that, too?
No. I didn't hurt. There's a story about that. Davey Boy Smith hurt his back on that.
Right.
When the Warrior was coming in, and they had the trap door in the middle of the ring. And we had a match against them. And he claims Brock watched his match. Like, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean,
were you in the ring with him?
Yeah, it was me and Alex. He's Davey Boy and Neidhart.
Right.
And he said he hurt his back, you know, and stuff. And there's, whatever, you know.
Yeah, so, he said he took a bump on the trap door.
On the trap door,
and
right.
And hurt his back.
Hurt his back. But everybody in the ring, I think, like, his deal was, like, they said, like, they didn't know the trap door. It's like everybody knew the trap doors in the ring. They said during the day, like, you know, bro, if you're messing with the ring, everybody knows that the ring has been changed. You don't know where to say it. So it was what it was. But, like, you know, I didn't get hurt on that. So,
but that was, you're talking about some of the stuff, WCW style. I mean, there's, like, in the 90s when WCW was hot, it was still, like, such a clown show in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
So many weird things that would happen, like maybe not tell you that there was a trapdoor,
right,
or get a royalty check for $0 and 0 cents,
right,
like that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you were in WCW before the NWO made it the hottest thing, and then afterwards as well.
I was there from the first. I got hired the week before Nitro went on the air.
Wow.
I was basically just, you know, I was hired for the Nitro years, and I was there for the, you know, the rise of the NWO and stuff and everything. The whole thing, I was there from the start to finish, with only a 6 week period where I wasn't on TV when I was hurt with my back. So I was like, I was a regular performer.
You were
for
a WCW mainstay.
Yeah, we were talking about this. me and Jarrett back in the day, we're talking. It's like, God, there was a lot of guys, you know, on the roster that didn't really get hurt a lot. You know, guys that put in a lot of hours in, you know, ring time, like house shows and everything. I was saying, like, we were saying, like, overall house shows and everything, and you add up the fact that, like, no, we never really got hurt. Like, who do you think were, like, the biggest workhorses back, you know, back when we were there and stuff? Was it, like, you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, me? You know, Jarrett? Booker T never got hurt. But a lot of the other guys were always getting hurt. They'd be out for a couple weeks. They'd be out for a month. They'd be, you know, and it was just funny just thinking, like, you know, you kind of like want to say, like, that there's something to that. Oh, you know, yeah. like protecting yourself out there to be able to wrestle as much as you can instead of, like, you know, well, risking things, you know?
And that's the thing, too. You're talking about WCW. I mean, we used to work 22 days a month, I remember.
Yep.
And guys like you and I and the Luchadores and Eddie and Chris and Dean were on every house show. Yep. Mm-hmm. And there would be three Luchador matches, me versus Dean, you right. versus, you know,
Alex or something.
Right. And then there would be Paige versus whoever showed up from the NWO.
Right.
Because to Paige's credit, he always worked
right,
as well.
Right, he worked hard, yes.
But the main stars never worked house shows.
No.
So it was always us on every show.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Like I said, we're workhorses.
Yeah.
You know, we literally did all the work, you know, so back then. It's like, because they, you know, back then they had the, there was the 12 guys on top. You know, and they could have, like, they couldn't afford to pay
Ravens,
you know,
12 guys. He
yeah,
made
yeah, right.
Yeah,
the 12 guys. Right, yeah. We had that, you know. So like there would always be two or three of the 12 guys would be on, like, the house show tours.
Yeah.
The other nine would be home, you know. And then, and so, like, there'd be like one or two matches with the top guys.
Yeah.
And then we would fill out the rest of the other six matches on the card.
And the top, know? And those 12 would be, we won't get them all, but it was Hogan,
right?
Sting,
uh-huh.
Luger,
uh-huh.
Nash, Hall.
Uh-huh. Piper, at some point.
Piper, right?
Macho.
Would Flair be in there too?
Flair.
Flair's eight.
Giant.
Page.
That's 10. God, there were two more.
But it was, yeah, those type of guys.
Yeah, right. The legend guys.
Legendary Hall of Fame guys.
Yes.
And then all of us.
All of us, right.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, let's talk about the actual Disco Inferno gimmick itself. Did you create this thing? I mean, who gave you that gimmick?
Ray, I can't.
What's that?
Raven came up.
Raven?
Yeah, no, but no.
It's
amazing
how much his influence is shown in so many different guys that I talked to.
Well, we're all friends.
Ah.
You know, so like perfect example, when I had met Raven before he was Raven, okay? Uh-huh. I met him when he was Scotty the Body, then he became Johnny Scotty Flamingo.
Oh, you're right,
Scotty
right.
Flamingo, then Johnny Polo,
yeah.
Then Raven, you know, the whole thing. I knew him the whole time. But, like, when I was, I'd been in the business for like a year and a half or so,
uh-huh.
which is, you know, maybe 2 years, could just try to come up with a gimmick. And he was like, Raven says he came up with the gimmick, but this is the actual story. He didn't, this was not his brain creative child out of his mind and everything.
Right.
There was a guy named Dr. Johnny Holiday in Canada. I don't know if you might remember the Canadian scene, Calgary Wrestling.
Jonathan Holiday.
Jonathan Holiday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so at one point, he was doing a gimmick called, like, Johnny Fever or something.
I remember, white suit.
White suit, but cheese, you know, he would just have a white suit on. He wouldn't have white pants on. You know, white suit, you know, typical, like, indie gimmick. And Raven showed me the tape. He had a tape of it. He goes, I go, oh, I could do that gimmick. You know, what can I call myself? And I don't know to this day if I came up with the Disco Inferno or he came up with the Disco Inferno, but one of us came up with the name Disco Inferno, okay?
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I got to give him credit for coming up with that and give me the idea, you know, but I ran with it. But, like, to this day, Raven will, you know him, he wants credit. He'll take it, you know, and everything. So he'll always take credit for that gimmick. But
and what exactly was the gimmick? Just the guy who dances?
Guy who did, you know, because you understand, when I grew up, I don't know who you like, before in the 90s, you broke in 1990. Before you broke in, say in 89, 88,
yeah.
You know, who were you a fan of?
I was a fan of the guys who I emulated. Shawn Michaels,
uh-huh.
Owen Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Benoit, Savage,
right.
Those type of guys.
Right.
You know?
So I was a fan of like the Honky Tonk Man, Dusty Rhodes, Roddy Piper. You know the the guys that did the gimmicky stuff,
right?
You know, instead of like the, you know, I mean, I was a fan of the other wrestlers, but like I thought it'd be easy for a guy like me if I go out there and do a couple moves like the Honky Tonk Man would do in the middle of the match. I go, this is an easy character to do. It's just because like this is what I try to tell, like. It's a forgotten thing in professional wrestling that guys don't really realize how important it is today, is that if you look back in history at the greatest professional wrestlers and the guys, the legends and stuff, or the most famous guys, is that they had something that they do during the match, that whether it's a catchphrase or whatever, that the fans can imitate. If the fans can imitate you and like do things vicariously through you, you're going to be over. You know, it's like, you know, Piper had the way he, like, when you imitate Piper, you can imitate Macho Man, you can imitate the Sheik, you can imitate, you know, you got a lot of imitatable characteristics that if a person, if two 13-year-old kids are wrestling each other, and one says, I'm the Disco Inferno, and the other says, I'm Chris Jericho, we're going to do our gimmicks, our showmanship, you know, the things that we do. And it's like, I try to tell the guys today that I'm teaching, I'm going to go, bro, try to find things like that to do. Instead of just going out there and being a guy that just wrestles, because you're gonna be more popular if you stick out on the card as the guy with the gimmick, you know, and stuff. And like I said, so that's what I tried to do. I come up with a couple dance moves, and you know, the kids would do it and stuff and things. And that, and to me, that was that's like my philosophy, and that's what I've always embraced in professional wrestling. That's what I was a fan of. You know, being able to imitate other guys.
The character of it.
The character, yeah.
Because I say that too. I mean, it's important to be able to have a good match, but it's more important to have a good character.
Yeah.
That's the most important.
Well, here's the thing. Is if you think of, you really think about it too, is the wrestling's gravitated towards, like over the years, towards there's an emphasis on match quality. So there's always like a mindset of, I want to go out there and have the best match. Okay? And like that's what guys try to do these days. Try to have the best match. But I try to tell them, bro, you know, back there was like when we wrestled, you know, there was like friendly competition amongst us. We were all like the shows were over, you know, we were all like stars back then. The shows were popular, so you don't want to be the guy on the show that went out there and didn't get a reaction. You know, we all tried to like, we all tried, like I said, I wasn't as good a worker as you and Eddie and those guys, like athletically and stuff, everything, but I could hold my own with crowd response. Because I would,
we were always booked against you.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you were in that group with us.
Right. So I would, so my mindset was always be, you know, I'm not going to go out there tonight and try to have the best match. I'm not, the, you know, if I'm not the best worker, I'm not going to have the best match. You know, it's just not, it's not simple. But what I can try to do is I can try to go out there and have the best reaction.
Right.
I'll go try, you know, if I'm going to try to get a really loud Disco Sucks chant tonight, you know, out there wrestling against Eddie or somebody, you know, and so I was always in the impression like I was going to hold my own out there as a performer because I wasn't going to, the fans weren't going to be quiet when I was wrestling, you know. So like I said, you know there was like friendly competition with us because like all the, you know, especially Raven in the locker room and stuff, everything. We all wanted to get good pops out there, you know, and we all did, you know, and it was fun, like it was competitive like that, but we were all working with each other, you know. So
do you remember we had a house show loop like somewhere in Kansas and I was a heel and you were a babyface?
Oh yeah,
they booked each other.
Bro, great. Remember this? Remember the whole sequence of events in that match?
Tell me.
I come out for my entrance, and I slipped on the stage.
Well, I worked my ass off to get this heel reaction.
Right. Oh, that's right.
They were booing me, and you came out to a monster pop, Road Warrior-esque,
right.
And then fell off the stage.
fell on my ass. Okay, I slipped and fell. Okay, so I get up, you know, it's like the people laughed, but thank God they didn't turn. So remember we did that spot in the match. Okay, it was like the tackle drop down, and when you went over me for the drop down, I like screwed up and like came up too early, and I tripped you. Okay, for a shoot, you hit face first and slid out of the ring underneath the rope to the floor for a shoot. But remember, the crowd popped huge.
Yeah.
Okay, like cause nobody ever really did that spot like that. Everything, all that. Remember, like we kind of like.
I think we started using that as a spot.
We started using it as a spot because it got a big pop. You
that's
know,
right,
so
very right.
Nice. So it's like, you know, we liked it. That was a funny night. We was in Kansas, Missouri, somewhere,
some
and all
weird
that.
Salina,
Kansas. That's exactly where it was.
Wow.
And it was funny. You remember, there's also a very. I believe it was that trip. That there was the we had the memorable David Penzer Outback Steakhouse incident. Do you remember this?
Please, okay. please tell me.
Remember when we went to like it was,
so we were all traveling together.
All traveling. I think the van was me, you, Penzer. It could have been this at any time. I'm pretty sure it was this trip. It was me, you, Penzer, Kidman, Norman Smiley, and I think Chavo. Okay, and that would have been
Was there like a Yuji Nagata in there too?
Maybe Yuji or Kaz Hayashi. Maybe Yuji or Kaz.
Well, I remember a Japanese guy being there because you talk a lot.
Right.
And I remember one time you just wouldn't stop talking, and Nagata just looked at me and said, "One karate chop to throat. He never talk again."
Because you're gonna be in the front seat, right?
Yeah.
So we go to an Outback Steakhouse, and like, you know, back then it's like, you know, well, you know, like how like low carb is like the thing today, but back then it's like, oh, you know, we eat baked potatoes
as much as you can,
as you can, right?
Milk,
milk. So we, I remember we ordered food, and you know, so there's like six or seven, eight of us sitting around the big round tables at Outback that they used to have, and you know, you gotta, I know you remember this, okay? Because it was the most disgusting thing ever that we've ever seen in professional wrestling. Remember, we take our ribeyes and we would cut the fat off,
yeah,
right? And we'd cut the fat off, we put it, and there'd be a bowl, and then it'd be in the middle of the table, yeah. And everybody would cut their fat off the steak and put it in the bowl. Remember? You gotta like picture a like a slab of fat off one of the ribeyes that was probably the size of like half of your hand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the palm of your hand, about half the palm of your hand. And remember when Penzer just like a dog that was like near the table, so, you know, that like got too close to the table where the food was in reach, just reached over, grabbed that big piece of fat and took it and just gulped it down in like one swallow. you
I remember
that. I remember that whole loop because there was so many funny things that happened. We were horrified. You know, it was like the worst thing I've ever seen. To this day, that's one of the worst things I've ever seen at a table, like eating with the boys, you know?
Well, and you had we were talking about the character, but was it ever hard for you, like when you had to be more serious? Because there was a time, I remember, you were kind of pushed more serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was that, like, how would you take the character of Disco Inferno, who's very goofy in a lot of ways, and make that more serious?
Oh, I just started kicking and punching with more ferocity during the match.
Hmm.
I tell that, like, then it's not that hard to do, because I remember Paul Orndorff gave me this advice. You know, he said, like, you know, when you get heat on, you know, when you're getting the heat on the guy, he goes, you have to be in the mindset that you have to believe what you're doing. Hmm. Like, you have to, like, your body language has to show, like, I'm beating up this guy. You know, I'm not fake wrestling punches, but I'm trying to hurt him. You know, and your body language and all that has to show that. And that's like the thing that I teach these kids. Like when I teach wrestling, my class is specifically just punching, kicking, and selling, making you look like you're the guy. You're not like you go. I wrestle a lot of indie shows. You know, you wrestle the main stuff. You know, with all the guys that can pretty much work and stuff. But like, there's always those. I mean, even so, on the main roster, sometimes, you know, like the NXT guys, the younger guys.
Oh, yeah.
There's just they there's just no ferocity in the detail stuff, like kicking, punching. You know, they don't like the in between the spot stuff. A lot of guys don't look good doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I try to tell these guys, don't be the guy that looks like the wrestler, that looks like the sissy puncher, that looks like the sissy kicker, that kicks like a, you know, that kicks, yeah, like that. I'm going to teach you to look like that. If you're the guy in the ring, that in the stands, that you're not going to want to hit the ring. Like, if you look at all the matches and think like, oh, I could beat that guy up, I could beat that guy up.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to really hit the ring on that guy. He may hit me hard.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so yeah, right, yeah. Right. You don't want to be like you. I want, you know, I teach you to try to be that guy, you know, to look like you can fight. Hmm. You know, and so the, so like, and like to this day, like I over the course of years, when I work, you know, whenever I do work, that's the one thing I've always done, is I just, when it's time to get heat, I just really turn it up with ferocity and intensity when you're beating the guy down.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that, the fans get with that still. That's still old school art that we grew up with. Mm-hmm. You know, like we grew up with watching guys that they didn't do a lot of the flying and acrobatics, they fought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people still get with the fights if, mm-hmm, they look good, you know. So
there's a hockey fight, we do the
hockey, yeah, the hockey fight spot. Yeah. Have you repeated that a few times, haven't you?
I have. I actually tried to do it to Miz last week. He wears this big kind of cloak, Jedi cloak, and I,
right,
tried to pull up, but it was too tight on him.
Oh, really?
He's gonna rip it right over his head. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great
yeah,
spot.
Great spot.
We did,
right,
that. You had your shirt on.
Right. Right.
And yeah. We did the hockey fight spot. And it's interesting. I never told you, because I haven't talked to you in a long time, but my very first angle in WWE was against China.
Right.
Where I had to put her over.
Right.
Now, I remember one time you had to put over Jackie and wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did you, right, get suspended for that?
Or I got fired.
You got fired for that?
Fired for that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I got fired because, but here was the deal with that. It's, okay, is when they, when Eric and Kevin brought me in to explain the angle to me, I had 4 months left on my deal, okay? So they're basically like, you know, they're not on the same page when they're explaining it to me. That's one thing I realized right off the bat. But like, so I'm asking, well, what happens to me after this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Eric says, well, I could see you do, you know, like doing an angle where the guys are saying something to you and you punch, you know, and then Kevin Sullivan, who's the booker, is like saying, no, I see you going away for 6 months. Do the math, brother. It's like, okay, I got 4 months left on my deal. I got, you know, I go away for 6 months, and I'm like, all right, you know. So when I left the room, I called, you know, Paige was a good friend of mine. Terry Taylor, who was on the booking committee, was a good friend of mine and everything. Bro, everybody I talked to said, don't do it. They said, do not do that. Just tell them you're not doing it. Every single person, you know. The boys, the office guy was telling me to say,
one of the bookers,
tell me to tell the other bookers you're not doing it.
What was their mindset for that? Just can't lose to a woman?
Back then, you know.
Yeah, it was different then.
It's different. This is before China.
Right.
You know, because China's a monster.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, when they're telling me, I see you going and having a hell of a match with her, I'm like, guys, I go, I'm 220. I go, your portrayer on TV is tough. She's a 120-pound girl.
Right.
I'm like, I'm sorry. I go, we could go out there and shoot, and she might be able to hold her own for a minute, but I'm going to, you know, it would be domestic. It would be abuse, you know, right? So, I mean, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But so I basically got fired, okay?
So you told him, I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to do it. And say, Eric says, you're fired. I'm all right.
That quickly, okay. Eric said, you're fired.
That quick. And they kind of screwed me because Eric had told me that I was going to not, they were going to let me go, okay, because I had 4 months left. But they hit me with the no compete, okay? And so I get the 4 month no compete. So, during that time, Russo was writing for them, and
writing for Vince.
Yeah. And so he didn't call me directly, but like I'd heard that they wanted to bring me in. Okay, like all right, you know, and to the point that they actually put like a silhouette of me, my character, a silhouette in the WWE magazine. Okay, like
really,
because Vince thought I was going to be coming in. I talked
so
to
Vince liked the character,
like the character, yeah. And so the Honky Tonk Man's protege was going to be the actual gimmick.
Really?
You know? Absolutely. Yeah, when I was a huge... I was like, oh, okay. But I never talked to Russo, okay? So Cornette had called me up a couple times. He was in talent relations then. And he had, what's your status? I'm like, okay, well, I get the 4 month no-compete. Here's the date that I could, you know... So, and I had probably two or three conversations with him over the course of a few months. And I had to reiterate every time. It's like, well, I've got... My 4 months is coming up, you know? Yeah. Now the date is this date, you know?
Yeah.
And then I finally talked to Bruce Pritchard. And I just reiterated the exact same conversation I was having with Cornette with Bruce Pritchard. I was like, I told him that they didn't hire me. Okay, and Bruce Pritchard I found out later that he told Vince he didn't like what I told him. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, whatever.
Him, yeah.
So then I saw Sting in the gym, and Sting and me were always cool. And he had told me, hey, well, let me. You know, I told him my situation, you know, because I've been, you know, I'm out of work right now. So and he says, you know, let me see what I can do. Okay, and he got me my job back.
Hmm.
But they brought me back under the condition that I had to put over Jacqueline, okay? So now I come back, it's like four and a half months later. Okay, so I've gone through the, you know, it's 4.5 months later. And Eric just is adamant on just, you know, making
the
me.
The principal. Yeah,
the principal, okay, but, so, because like, they didn't, you know how they were with the mid-card guys.
Yeah.
They didn't really care. You know, like, they could do angles with us and everything, and it would be like, okay, you know, I don't even know if they would watch on the monitor or even pay attention, you know, because like all they cared about is the big stuff. So I don't even think Eric realized this, but they knew I was going to have to put her over. So Terry Taylor put the TV title on me. Okay. So they put the, I got the TV title, and then they're trying to like, well, we can't beat him. Like, hey, you know, like, girl beat it because he's a TV champion. They're like trying to work Eric, you know, like,
which is so funny when you think like Eric, like, you know, I'm thinking WWE, Vince would have to sign off on you being the TV champion.
Right. Right.
There, Eric didn't even care or even know,
probably,
right?
Yeah. Probably not. And the funny thing was, so if I would have had this conversation with Eric before I'd gotten fired, okay, if they were more clear to me about what they wanted, okay, and so Eric explained to me what he wanted. I go, what exactly do you want with this, okay, with the match? It's like, well, just one thing, you grow up, you've been taught you can't hit a girl. Okay, so you have to, like, construct a match. The girl wants to wrestle you, but you can't. You can't go out there and beat up a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, that's... I felt like, why didn't you guys tell me this before? I could do a match around this concept, and if something, because she's pretty athletic, you know, and she can do a lot of stuff. We can do stuff where I can skate around the issue where I'm not really hitting her, but I'm wrestling her and stuff and all that. So, and if you ever watched that match, I don't, you know, you probably wouldn't, but I mean, it was pretty entertaining for what we did, and it actually made a lot of sense in the story that was, you know, told to me then, and the way the announcers told the story.
So once you tell it in a way that makes the description and the information, the details that you need to make it work.
Right, exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You actually worked not just as a wrestler for WCW, you started working with the booking committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did that come up? Because I always laugh at you because you had like all these ideas,
right,
and five of them would be great and five of them would be ridiculous,
right, right,
and you wouldn't know the difference, right, of which one was which.
Right, but they were always intriguing, all of them, right? You know, as I say, like, like each idea would pop you, but they'd be like, we can't do that on the show, you know? Like, yeah. You know, but then somebody would be like, hey, maybe we can, but like, remember, like, I'd always, because me and Terry were close, you know, and I was always throwing ideas. And like, I'm the one that got him and said, you know, when Ernest Miller was always talking smack backstage, everybody, you know, you remember him, like,
yeah,
he's always
running. As a shoot,
run his mouth. Like, bro, put this guy on TV and just give him the mic. Let him do the backstage stuff on TV. And he got over.
Yeah.
Then like, and remember when they used the idea that I had for the holds? The Christian right there.
That's what I was getting to. One of my most famous things,
right,
that people will reference to this day is the Man of 1004 promo, Man of 1004 holds promo,
right,
in Chicago.
Right.
This was your idea.
Right, it was my idea.
You know?
So it was my idea. And remember, we had a lot. Here's the thing. When we come up with an idea like that, everybody kind of wants credit for it.
Yeah.
Because remember, we were like just coming up with the list of the names we could use for the holds and stuff,
yeah,
and everything. You know, Madden to this day kind of tries to claim this is his idea. You know, like, I'm like, bro, no, it's not your idea.
And Raven will say that.
Course, you know, because we were all like, you know, coming up. But still to this day, it's like they didn't even do that angle correctly, because like back then we always had to work a match.
Yeah,
remember you had to go work a match.
Yeah,
and then like grab you had to get your 8 minute match in.
It's not even 5 minutes. I had to, the only time I ever worked Marty Jannetty, who's
right,
one of my favorites,
right,
was a 4 minute throwaway match just to get to this promo.
Instead
of going out there and just doing the promo.
Which would have been even more entertaining,
yes,
if you would have been out there reading the list of holds for like 3 minutes. Supposed, you know? But that was funny. You know, right-handed punch.
Left-handed
punch. You know?
Right. And, yeah, so I had the stack of computer paper.
Right, right, right.
And like a scroll. I'm now going to read my 1004 holds and started, you know, like you said, arm bar.
Right, right.
Russian arm bar.
Yeah, right.
Jump.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Raven, of course, moss handle, three handle.
Three dozen credunzel or something.
Family credunzel or something. Then we go to break,
right,
and then I switch over to just like cheap heat, like, oh, I hate the Chicago Bulls, I hate the Blackhawks. So 3 minutes later when we come back from break, people,
yeah,
are really booing me,
right,
and I'm like, you know, hold number 700, like, as if,
yeah,
I've been,
right,
reading the holds,
yeah,
the whole,
right,
time. So how did you pitch that? Do you remember that day?
Like, I just told Terry, I said, bro, you got to do this. This is great, because we always pitch ideas. So
yeah,
then they started using some of my ideas, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, whatever it is. I mean, I'd always had, like, because it's different being. I was talking to Conan about this the other day. When I got to booking, okay, like, we're fast forward a little bit, but you know how I was backstage. Always had like ideas we should do, you know, stuff, and so I sat on the plane next to Russo on an airplane one time, like one of the trips, and we just, you know, picked each other's brain for like 2 hours, okay. So the next thing I know, a few weeks later, they asked me to come sit in on the booking meetings, you know. And the one thing that I would contribute is that, you know, there's always been a separation of like the boys and the office. You know, the office, you know, like Arn would go out drinking with us and stuff, everything, you know, so he was kind of like one of the boys too. But you know, the office as a whole didn't really integrate a lot with the boys, like the camaraderie that we had. You know, we were all going out together and stuff. But so I was always like the guy that like knew the guys, like all of us,
right,
knew on a personal level, and like would always pitch things. Hey, let this guy try this because I know him, and he like, this is part of his personality you don't see on TV, but we could try to get it on TV, you know, pitch stuff like that, because I'm friends with everybody, you know. So I was just the guy that was always in there just trying to pitch stuff for like the mid-card guys,
mm-hmm,
that they weren't really that weren't progressing like they should. I was just constantly trying to pitch ideas to like for things for them to do.
So what kind of ideas did you pitch that got on the air?
I'll credit this. Like, bro, when Lance Storm's Evil Canadian,
uh-huh,
I booked that whole thing.
No kidding.
Yes, yes. So the whole thing. So that was fun too. And bro, if you think about it, to this day, It's almost like a lost formula that they don't really use anymore. But we started pushing, like, he came in as a baby. Everyone wanted him to be a baby face. And he was just like, I just didn't see it. You know, he was kind of like, you know, Lance. Yeah, it's a quirky, very serious, like the, yeah. like a,
chip
like
on
a,
his shoulder
like,
type.
Like the mean gym teacher in school. Yeah. You know, right? Yeah. So it's like, got that serious, you know? So I was like, let's make him like, just start a serious Canadian guy, okay? And it started getting over. So like we had him win one of the belts, you know, like it's like, hey, let's give him another belt, you know, so each week or like over the course he was winning, he had like three belts.
Yeah.
But we never took a step backwards. We just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. Just, you know, like took a new character and just pushed
him. Got him over, yeah.
Until he fought for like, there was on a, they could have done a pay-per-view with him, but like he wrestled for the title. On a Nitro.
The world title.
The world title against Booker T on a Nitro during an hour. I remember like when Raw, we started at 8 o'clock, I think, and you guys started at 9 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. We put him on it like, it was like the 9 o'clock, right? And it was the first time that the rating for like our 9 o'clock always went down because your show would start. It was like the first time the rating for our 9 o'clock spot did really, really, really well. You know, and stuff. And so, and it's just, but it's just a simple formula. Uh-huh. But just push the guy and don't give him his law, you know, have him lose or just keep pushing him.
Yeah.
You know, keep pushing him. And it was fun doing that, you know, like booking that.
What were some of the ones that didn't make it?
But bro, you got to understand, like, this is funny because I get credited with, people think that, like, a lot of my ideas were like serious.
Okay.
Like, you know, so like, you know, I've been credited like, you know, with the Invisible Man.
What's that?
Yeah.
You
know, well, so we'd be sitting in the, you've never really sat in a booking meeting before.
No, sometimes, and I want to hear about that too. What do you do?
There's just writer's block, bro. You're in there for like 8-9 hours, you know, or sometimes 7 or 6.
Who else was in there? Russo,
me, Russo, Ed Ferrara, Terry Taylor, Jeremy Borash is on the computer with Bill Banks, who just was kind of like, Bill Banks was just there. I don't even know.
Get sandwiches.
He said two words like the entire day, you know?
Oh, Goldberg was in the top 12. He might be the other
Goldberg's
guy.
Goldberg was in the top 12. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, so Vince would pitch most of the ideas, and we would just sit there and tweak and stuff. But sometimes you're stumped, and you're sitting there for 2 to 3 minutes, and nobody's saying a word, you know? So, like, it was one of those times where we're all just sitting there, where there's writer's block, and I'm like, oh, all right. Picture silence for like 3 minutes. I'm like, what if we show a shot of an empty locker room and just shoot the locker room? Nobody's there. And 30 seconds later, coming soon, the Invisible Man. and everybody pops, you know, everything. It's like we wouldn't do it, right, you know, right. And everything. But like, so everybody's like, oh, you know how word travels fast. Like if somebody says, Disco wants to put the Invisible Man on the show, yeah. Then it starts, people start repeating it like it's, yeah, like it's a true story,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and like the same thing, we were, there was a period of time we'd meet at a hotel on Windy Hill Road in Atlanta, by right by Man of M Fitness Gym. And so it was we had a conference room there. We go there every week. And so I got there early, like 15, 20 minutes early. And you know, like when you're giving a presentation in a boardroom or something and you got those big giant pads where you can flip the pages and everything. Bro, I wrote out like 6 months of TV, okay, like in an outline form, okay, of a Martian invasion angle, okay. And like it started with like week one, you know, Mike Tenay is sitting at the announcer's desk and two antenna pop out of his head like a Martian, okay, like, you know, okay. So we started. Like, so I'm just presenting this, and the funny thing is Terry Taylor, you know, Vince and Ed and Borash would just crack up, you know, at all this stuff, but Terry Taylor would he get so aggravated because he didn't want to waste any time. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I'm like pitching this, you know, the whole thing with the Martian invasions, like who are the Martians and the Martians are coming, and you know, now the American, you know, the WCW wrestlers are trying to defend the planet, you know, stuff. And like the whole thing, the purpose was like, it all culminates on January 1st, 2001. The name of the paper is called A Space Odyssey. Okay. So I present this. So to this day, of course, you know, word travels. It's everything. People think I try to book, you know, a Martian invasion angle, even though that was like a joke presented to the room. And I also get credit for Bill Ding the evil architect, okay, as one of the
Bill Ding.
But that was Terry. Okay, that was Terry Taylor's brainchild, and has always been. But since I did The Invisible Man and The Martian Invasion, everybody's married Bill Ding to what, as one of my ideas. So I get just you know, I got this curse of like he just always has these crazy
the
stupid. I'm like, bro, come on. If you actually think, if you take that seriously, you know, like Mike today, two antenna popping out of his head, and think I could go, you know, like come on, that's not serious.
I remember once Nash, when he was booking, there was a place in Georgia called Hoganville. You see the sign for it on the road. Right. And he had like, I want to do this vignette where I turn off the Hoganville exit to get gas. And I go and like everyone, like the old lady by the counter looks like Hogan.
Right, right.
The guy, you know, cooking food looks like Hogan. The kids running look like Hogan. So same idea. Like you would never do that. But just a funny idea that just pops in your head.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That, you know, I had a million of them.
Yeah.
It's like there's only a handful ever get on TV. You know? So.
How far did that go for you working as a booker? Or in the
I did in TNA a lot too. So yeah, man, probably two years of
who's
of that.
Dean Baldwin. Shark Boy was
Dean Baldwin. He always wanted to do the Dean Baldwin gig.
He looks like a Baldwin.
He looks like a Baldwin, you know. Like, he smoked the cigarettes, you know, I'm a Baldwin, you know. But I did it in TNA. It was me, Vince, Jeff, and Dutch Mantel.
Mm.
And that was like when Borash would be in there too, I think sometimes. But
it's a lot of the same guys from that WCW room.
Yeah. Well, whenever Vince booked somewhere, I was always like either me or Ed would be like, you know,
he'd bring you with him.
Bring him with him, yeah. Because we always had just, you know, bro, let me tell you this. You know, whatever people say about booking, okay, writing, whatever you call it, is if you don't have, like, whether they're good or bad, if you don't have ideas, period, you just can't, you go nowhere, you know? So sometimes you have to have just bad ideas because a bad idea can be thrown out and it could ignite in somebody's creative mind a good idea,
right?
You know, but like having ideas is the most important thing. If you don't have ideas, you just nothing happens, you know.
You gotta throw everything against the wall.
Throw everything against the wall.
I went to Carrot Top last night, and 80% of his stuff is brilliant, 20% sucks,
right?
But if you didn't have the stuff that sucked, you would never know what was brilliant, you know?
You'll suffer through, you know, periods of stuff that stink if you know moments of brilliance are coming.
Right.
You know, so that's as long as you're getting, then that's how, if you think about it, I tell people that this is how professional wrestling is. It's moments of brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
We remember the moments of brilliance. We don't remember, I can't remember a match I had from you from start to finish, but I can remember the spot with me coming out, landing on my ass and me tripping over, like, going to you.
Yeah.
We can remember like flashes of things we've done over the course of time, but that's what fans remember too. They remember moments. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't remember everything, you know, and stuff. So you have to, if you have your moments, you're going to be sticking people's memories.
That's
you know?
A great point. It's like that for a rock and roll band or an actor. Right. You look at the whole body of work. You don't remember the bad movies Tom Hanks has been in, but you sure remember the good ones.
Right, exactly.
Or the good Rolling Stones songs or whatever it may be.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I still, one of my favorite memories of WCW in that time was the 2 weeks where we had the main event tapings in Orlando.
Right, oh yeah.
Where all of us would go to Orlando and stay. What was that place that had Pineapple Pete's?
Pineapple Pete's was the bar.
It was the bar, but it was
the courtyard, maybe? It was a courtyard.
I don't know, but
red
it was,
roof or something.
It
like
was all big kind of resort, and everyone used to just kind of hang outside the doors because everyone was down there for like 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah, 2 weeks at a time, yeah.
You know, and you'd have like, I remember you mentioned Jim Mitchell, like just crazy Mitchell. Like, Canyon used to torment him
quite
a bit too.
Oh,
what did he used to do to him?
Oh, he was just abusive.
Like,
It was like an abusive, because Mitch was so annoying, you know, that like, you know, that he would just, you know, Canyon was just like abusive towards him. Like, I was like, you know, like, he'd smack him or something. It's bizarre.
He stole the room key and opened up the door and ran in there with a big bucket of snow and poured it on his back, like while he's sleeping in the winter, stuff like that.
Yeah. He just, you know? It's just.
What are your memories of Canyon? Kind of, I haven't really thought about him in a while, but pretty funny guy.
Well, you know, I mean, it was one of my best friends.
Yeah.
You know, like we broke in together and
you
stuff.
Him and Kidman, right?
Kidman, but
Fingers the Magician.
Right. But Canyon had the first guy I'd ever met that had an unbelievable VCR tape collection of professional wrestling. He had everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so like, wow, we'd go over his house. Do you have this and stuff? You know, we'd pull out, you have this library of tapes. So we would always, like, Canyon was always like the place we'd go to watch a pay-per-view if we weren't, you know, we'd go to watch wrestling. You know, we worked out, we ate, you know, together and stuff. Like, he's a good friend, but it's funny because he had a temper. I'll never forget, you know, like, sometimes, like, he gets so mad at me, he'd go, get out of my house, you know, like, it's great. You know, I can annoy people, yeah, you know, indeed. So, right, really? So, he used to kick me out of his house sometimes because he'd get mad, but it was funny because, When this is this sidebar interesting story about the Disney tapings. Okay, so we're down there doing the Disney tapings. This is back when I don't know if you were there, but maybe you were. But when Pillman was a nutcase. You weren't there because he was
Disney tapings was worldwide, right? I said main event, but it was worldwide.
Worldwide. Yeah. But we would do Florida,
yeah,
like
tape,
you know, Tampa. It was at Universal Studios, but then we.
Nitro
and Thunder would be Monday, Tuesday, yeah. And we would go to Lakeland, Florida, or Tampa, or wherever it was. And so at this time, I remember Pillman was doing his crazy gimmick where he was like, you know, started doing the shoot angle with Kevin Sullivan, right? But during all this, it was funny because Pillman, it was a Courtyard Marriott. That's what I think it was, the hotel down there.
It wasn't that nice.
Afterwards, you left, we started saying the Courtyard Marriott. But Pillman would We go to Canyon's room, and Canyon would bring a box full of tapes down from Atlanta with it because he would drive down. But he had like a lot of Roddy Piper stuff because he knew I liked Piper, and like Pillman was like studying Roddy Piper, like he'd go in his room, like he'd take the tapes and like he'd go in his room for like hours and just study Roddy Piper. And if you watch Pillman back then when he was doing this angle with Kevin, we're doing the Booker Man gimmick and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
This was in the middle of him watching Roddy Piper footage the whole time. And he was like integrating Roddy Piper into his act, you know, and stuff. And so it was nuts. You know, that's like loose cannon. That's where it all kind of came from.
Huh.
It's like Canyon's tape collection of Roddy Piper. And just Pillman just got so interested in watching the Roddy Piper stuff. He started doing this. The loose cannon started developing out of the Disney tapings, you know, when we'd be down
there.
Because
that used to be, we'd go and you'd have four tapings a day.
Yep.
And then just go and like drink.
Well, there was remember we used to go to the
Eight Tracks.
That was the 70s,
downtown,
right?
Disney,
right. Yeah. Right.
Everyone would just go to Eight Tracks.
That was like the right drink beer and listen to dance to 70s music. Right.
Do you think? Did you read Canyon's book after he passed away?
I haven't read it. I'm not a big reader.
It's you could see there was like because I always suspected and I didn't care, but I suspected he was gay.
Right.
And he was.
Right.
But never. I guess maybe at that point he couldn't really say anything about it or do anything about it. But it really talked about how tortured he was as a gay man, not being able to talk to anybody about it,
right?
Which is weird for me because he could have told us. I mean, we didn't give a shit.
I didn't, when he told me, he's like, you know, he when he came out and it was like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's like looking at me like for hey, so what do you think about me coming out? You know, and he was like looking like this big like he'd think like I'd be like celebrating. I go, bro, I don't care. It's like I don't know, it's a big deal. I know you haven't dated a girl since I've known you.
It's like, we would go to Disney.
Right.
Everyone's banging everything they could find,
so,
and you don't ever have a date.
Right. Yeah, so like I don't care. Big deal. I thought you were asexual. You know, you're a homosexual. Who cares?
Right.
You know, I didn't buy. Still, one of my best friends. You know,
yeah.
So, big deal. You know, so.
It's a drag because he eventually ended up, you know, committing suicide. And I wonder, you know, now we have Darren Young is gay, comes out of the, you know, nobody cares. I wonder if he could have been able to do that, if that would have helped him a bit.
I'm surprised more people, athletes, because of the acceptance, that more guys haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really weird thing to think that people, like, it's like a big secret like that.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping that inside you. I can't even comprehend, you know, like carrying a burden where, like, this is... Like at some point, it's like you're really thinking, like, should I just let everybody know? You know, and just you're just keeping a secret from like your friends.
Yeah,
you know, like
guys
like,
that you see every day,
every
22
day.
Days a month,
22 days a month. Yeah. It's kind of weird because you know how the wrestling, like you know how the wrestling friends are.
Yeah,
it's like we're weird. You know,
right?
We'll see each other and like connect and be on the road and we'll hang out all the time. But then like we won't see each other for a year or two and just you know, won't talk and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But like you just your wrestling friends, you just. Pick up where you left off every time you see him again.
It's like war buddies.
War buddies, exactly. We're with our families, our other friends, everything. But your wrestling buddies were like, you know, we spend a lot of time with. You know, it's kind of, maybe we kind of get sick of each other. Yeah. We spend so much time. You know, it's like you got to travel or the car or the city or the gym. We're everywhere except like when we're sleeping. And sometimes you're in the room together. Like, yeah. And, you know,
because we always share rooms at that point,
too. Yeah, absolutely. You absolutely. Know? I remember Kidman was always like, you know, remember he, I'd wake up like, you know, sometimes I snore, you know, when I sleep on my back, I snore. And I wake up the next morning, there'd be like, you know, like a shoe next to my head. And they go, Kimmy used to throw shoes at me when I'd be snoring. So, he was the worst. He was like the worst sleeper, you know. Hey, Kimmy, let's go. We got to get it. You got to get up. I say, screw you. Shut up. You know, wake up. We got to the airport. You know?
Benoit used to do that. If he had to get up early and you could sleep in, he would zip his bag up and down on purpose and then shake, like, you know, vitamin bottles. So you'd be like, zip, just to wake you up.
Oh, right.
You know, because his flight was at 6 and mine was at 10.
Right.
Why did you do that? You know? I don't know. But I mean, that's the type of stuff you do.
Quirky stuff.
Pick on
each other.
Right? Now, you talk about, you know, you could annoy people. Like, I remember like the Nasty Boys were always on your case.
No, but they liked me, though.
Yeah.
It was just funny because the Nasty Boys and the Steiners would just always have a few guys that they would just pick on.
Yeah.
You know, and see, like the Steiners would pick up, you know, but Scott Steiner was like, I was hanging out with Scott Steiner back in Atlanta, but, you know, he'd pick on me, he'd pick on Rey Mysterio, you know, they'd like Rick Steiner was just like, you know, they'd like play the bully gimmick,
yeah.
you know, in the locker room around the boys, you know, it's like, the Nasty Boys are the same way, but like, you know, they had to like you to do that. They wouldn't like screw with, you know, people they didn't like. You know, they would just get you in the ring if they had a chance to just clobber you. You know,
I remember my first house show ever was in like Ithaca, New York, or something. Didn't the Nasty Boys take your rent a car keys?
And I
just
remember God,
just you know, your keys just like throwing them away.
Maybe they took like,
where's my keys? I can't find my keys anywhere. Where's my keys?
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, let's look for your keys, Disco.
Yeah, right.
You know,
well, those old school guys like them and like, you know, Kurt Hennig and them.
Yes,
their ribs were kind of like
a little vicious, little heavy.
Yeah. You know, and Kurt was always like, remember when Kurt took stole Kidman's trunks. Remember, Kidman had he was wearing the blue, you know, the blue denim cutoffs, you know, when he was in the flock, right? And he stole his trunks or his pants. So Kidman had to go out there with black, you know, so he had to go buy a new pair of jeans. You know, I don't know if they had bought a new pair of jeans. He had to wear like his regular shorts, you know, and go out there and wrestle. It looked like a schmuck, you know. So, but it's funny because, like, in retrospect, you know, when they would pull these ribs, Kurt would be like the guy's like, hey, guys, you know, hey, we got to find Kidman's shorts. Yeah. You know, hey, have you seen Kidman's shorts?
Hiding,
you know, like,
in plain sight.
Right. Yeah. They'd be like, you know, hey, have you seen Kidman's shorts? Kidman's looking for shorts. Guys, you seen it? Like, you know, like one of those, like, all right, we get it, bro. You know, it's where are the shorts? You know,
it's like pumping iron. Where's my blue shirt?
Have you seen
his blue shirt anywhere? Right. But that vibe was, I just remember that. I remember too, the Steiners everybody that was on the, the trainer was called Coach.
Right.
We had eight coaches, so I'm not sure which coach it was. Right. Taped him down to the table and wanted to like stick stuff up his ass.
Yeah, right. It's like, come on, like, yeah, bro, back this is before political correctness, the internet came, like, you
before
wouldn't even
HR.
My God. I mean, like, think about back then. In this day and age, if that would have happened.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Forget it.
An employee, like, you know, of the company. Not a wrestler. Yeah. An actual employee, salaried, under contract, right. Benefits.
Right. And they're abusing the guy. I mean, you know. But that was. But we would, like, laugh at that back then.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, like, even you'd laugh and you'd be like, that's kind of like, you know, geez. I'm, come on, guys. Please don't try that with me, guys.
If it wasn't you,
right.
It was hilarious. If it was you, you wouldn't like it too much.
Right.
Just as we wind down here, Martin Short, funny or not funny?
Oh, come on, you know that. You know
those. Tell a story about this, though.
You're Canadian.
Yeah.
You know, Canadians think Martin Short is funny.
Yeah.
I don't think he's funny.
He's hilarious. He's still to this day.
We don't have
any appreciation for Martin Short.
I just don't think he's that funny. And most Americans will agree. And remember we did the poll? I was shocked. There was like 50-50.
We did a poll in the WCW locker room. This is what we used to do. You guys think that, you know, Nitro's coming up and we're in the ring practicing or going over the
course.
Me and Disco and maybe Conan or somebody
Bob
else.
Bob Ryder. Right.
Walking around polling the WCW roster.
Right.
On whether they think Martin Short is funny or not funny.
So they can find content for the internet. Because it's back when, like, the internet show would be like going pre-show and they needed, like, you know, is Martin Short funny or not funny before the show? You know, that's the stuff we do because we're killing time.
Right.
You know, it's like, dude, people don't get it. You know, you're there like 6, 7 hours before your match. It's like, we're just trying to figure out what to do. You know, it's like, geez.
I remember Bret Hart said he was funny.
Right. Of course, all you guys, Canadian guys, said he was funny. It's like, you know, and then remember me and Madden, Raven. Uh-huh. God, there were a few. Who were the other guys who were parading the Martin Short is not funny?
Well, I do remember that I finally like got enough nerve to go ask Bischoff because right. he didn't really talk to anybody. He right. just kind of would just wander around. Right. And I said, Eric, we're doing a poll. Do you think Martin Short's funny? He's like, funny, not funny. What's the difference? And just walked away.
Great participant, right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hey, thanks like, for your help. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah,
we didn't ingratiate yourself with your employees, right?
We can put that on the internet, yeah, right? Yeah. Oh man.
As we get towards the end here, what's your favorite match of all time?
Of all time,
if you had to pick one that you had,
that I had, mm-hmm. I'll tell you what the funnest match I had was that match we had in Salina, Kansas, because it was fun.
Yeah,
because like, it was like, you know, you're not going to have another match like that where there's two, you know, massive screw ups in the match to kind of get a pop, and like, you know. So that was a fun match because yeah. the house, you know, the crowd was hot back
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
I also wrestled on a just kind of like, I'm proud of it, is that I wrestled Benoit on a Thunder on a Nitro one time, and we were, you know, this is back in Nitro before you know, when you don't leave yet because the show's not finished, you know, again,
yeah, they're booking the show as the show is on
the show
air.
Going on.
Yeah.
So we're dressed, you know, and they say, like, you know, hey, the 15 minutes, 10 minutes before the show starts, hey, you got 12 minutes with Benoit, segment two. I'm like, what? You know, it's like, all right, it's okay. So I basically just had to get dressed on the thing, didn't really even go over nothing. And, like, you know, went out there with, like, Benoit, had, like a just because of, like, the conditions which you're presented, you know, with.
Sure.
You're on Nitro, say, you know,
yeah.
And went out
TV.
There and, like, and killed it with Benoit to where people, you know, I liked wrestling guys like that because I took, you know, my gimmick is, like, I take a good beating. Mm-hmm. You know, so guys, like, it was funny. Like, you could beat me up. You look good beating me up, you know, something. So we always had good stuff together because, you know, people liked it when he would chop me really hard. So, you know, the crowd pops, you know? Like,
you had a great chest for chopping, too.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Perfectly formed, just bam, you know?
Right. But that was a match I was proud of. Just,
what do you think led to the kind of the decline of WCW being there, like you said, from the start to the finish? I wanted to ask you that before.
It's just like what you, the inevitability, bro. You can see, when you see the glass ceiling and you never break it. And just like then it becomes too late, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like I said, you got to let the people book the show. If a wrestler is becoming popular, okay, continue push. Don't push him to a point, okay? Because then what's going to happen is the perception of those guys are just going to always be stuck like around in the middle, you know. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time when all the top guys are. Their popularity fades, okay? It affects the rest of the roster to where, you know, these guys aren't just going to be over because, like, the show's not over as much. You know, so I just think them not really integrating, pushing the mid-card talent. Like, you know, we had future WWE heavyweight champions on the roster that we were suppressing, you know, for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. That if we would have integrated and continued just creatively, you just open up so many more things because you have new guys like you, Eddie, you know, Benoit and everything, that you can start integrating with the top 12, mm-hmm. and doing angles with them and just, you know, making the show, you know, more over. But what happened was, is what happened. They never did that, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just, and on the other show, you know, Raw, they're doing that.
Constantly.
They're pushing guys constantly. And like, so people like to see that. They want to see the rise of the character. You know, once you've seen the stars, like, you know, WCW had the stars, we had the top 12. Well, all those guys wrestled each other over the course of 3 years. You know what I mean?
Like, so many times you can do that.
Right,
yeah.
So many times you can do that. And then I think that ultimately is what happened.
Yeah. Do you have any hot news?
No, do you have any hot news? Matt, that was good because I remember I told you one of the conditions I wanted to be on the show was that I had to be on the show before Mark Mann ever is on the show. So yeah. It's great. And I said I would bury Conan, but I can't bury Conan.
Ah,
but,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what about, wait a minute, just real quick before we go, what about the Conan list? Is Conan still on the Conan list?
No, explain the list.
The code of the that you would just purposely, like, have guys contact you constantly and never return their calls. Okay? And so I think Conan did it like 3 or 4
yeah.
times. And like I said, I think he saw, I don't know what Jericho is, he won't return my calls. I go, well, it's probably, you're probably on a list, the Conan. We called it the Conan list. Yeah. And then if you didn't, if you return a call,
yeah, you're on the Conan list.
Conan's
on the list. You right. were on the list.
Raven,
Madden,
Raven. Raven, right.
But now all those guys have been on this show,
right?
Except for Madden.
Except for Madden.
So now it's the Madden list.
The Madden list. That's great. We've invented a new term, the Madden list.
Right? Cool. All right, if you want to hear more crazy stories, some disco inferno, some ridiculous opinions, always the butt of many jokes, that's very disrespectful. Check out Keeping It 100 with Conan, the podcast that's sweeping the airwaves on the Jericho Network. It is a huge hit. Conan, Kevin Gill, and Disco Inferno, and all their crazy guests and opinions and discussions will keep you entertained every week. I'll tell you something else, too. Their ad reads are absolutely amazing. I love listening to the ads on Keeping It 100 with Conan. Disco is a big part of that show. Very knowledgeable, very funny. Also starting up a little bit of a huge feud with Cyrus from Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. That's every Tuesday. Disco versus Cyrus are starting to get on each other's nerves. There will be a showdown. Who's going to win? You're going to have to listen to Keeping It 100 and a Killing the Town to find out. And also, don't forget about Hilarious. We're talking about Team Tiger Awesome every Sunday morning. This week, they're talking about Space Jam, the classic Michael Jordan movie Space Jam. Lots to talk about there. And you know, Mundy, Truly, and Gage know everything about that movie, I'm sure. Go check it out. Lots of fun, entertaining tales and stories and hosts on the Jericho Network. I'm getting ready to drop my fourth show on the network. Once again, it's not wrestling. It's not comedy. Something else completely different, which I think you will love. If you love Talk is Jericho, you're going to love my next show on the Jericho Network, and I'm getting ready to unveil it very soon. And of course, there's this show, Talk is Jericho, every Wednesday and Friday. Go hit the subscribe button on iTunes. Leave everyone on the Jericho Network and myself 5-star ratings and reviews. Thank you for that. And thanks to all of you for supporting the Talk is Jericho sponsors. Couldn't do this show without them or you. And that includes the OG sponsor, Amazon. You find all my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got those Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. I'll tell you right now, you can get anything you want for the holidays at them Talk is Jericho links. There's no extra fees, no hidden charges, any product you want. If you want to be a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior, whatever you buy on using my Talk is Jericho links, take a screenshot of it, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet you and I will follow you as well. All right, don't forget, go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You also find all the rest of my great sponsors on there as well. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 25% off the DDPY program and all DDPY swag. Do it now. Omaha Steaks, very tasty meals, very great, great cuts of meat. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter the promo code, once again, Jericho, in the search bar, and you'll get a family gift pack for $49.99. Simply Safe, go to simplysafejericho.com to get $200 off the special holiday security package to keep your home safe. And of course, Bowling Branch, go to bowlingbranch.com, use that promo code, Jericho, save $50 off your first set of sheets. You try them out for a month. If you don't like them, you send them back, get your money back. Everything is taken care of. All for the betterment of your sleep. You got to go do this. And don't forget, for the betterment of your life, it's the biggest podcast ever, ever, ever. March 15th, 2017, when Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, the countdown rolls on. Only 101 days until Mick Foley is here. We've been counting down all year long. All right, it's going to be a huge show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for listening to the shows that you're going to listen to, for the ones you have listened to, Talk and Shop Live in Shanghai. Completely ridiculously insane. There's one point where all four of us are talking, not pay attention to each other. And I was like, this is the worst / best radio you're ever going to hear. Listen to that. Check out Glenn Matlock, 40 years of the Sex Pistols as well, from last week. Keep listening right now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And this Friday, I got O'Shea Jackson. That's right, O'Shea Jackson Jr. He played his father in Straight Outta Compton. He played his father, Ice Cube, in Straight Outta Compton. He's a great guy. He's a big fan of mine. I'm a big fan of his. O'Shea Jackson will be here this Friday. So check it out. Stay tuned. We'll see you then. Be cool. Stay hard. Stay hungry. And a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.